Good evening and welcome to Friday Night Jazz here on Vermont Public Radio with your host, Reuben Jackson. And if you can hear this excitement in my voice, it's because one of my favorite artists on the planet is here in the Colchester Studios. She's performing tonight at Linden State College and stopped by this week to chat. You can't see the excitement here on the air, but it's here. But I am so happy to be here talking to, I think, one of the great artists. And I was talking to her about her just enticing restlessness. And so welcome, Ricky Lee Jones, to the VPR studio.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I know from you have many fans here in this building and certainly beyond, but I know this is not your first visit to Vermont. So you've been here before. Is that
correct? Been coming to this town. I'm sure I was there with the Lyle Lovett tour in 90 or 91 or 89. And I'm sure I was here before that. Maybe. Yes. Once. So, and a few times after.
Ah.
Each time, less people.
Interesting. Well, welcome back. Welcome back. And we're, to say the least, we're excited to have you here. And again, thank you for taking time out of your schedule to just talk a bit about your music,
your career,
that sort of thing. We were talking before we started officially, I guess we can say, about – I was thinking about your work and this coat of many colors. That's one way I kind of use to describe it, your original work and your willingness to delve into other people's materials, which, okay, other singers do, but – I was thinking about this on the way to the studio, and I mentioned your version of Tim Hardin's song, Reason to Believe. My question is this: how is it more of a challenge to find a way into another composer's work as opposed to, say, something that you've come up with? Or how does that work for you?
It's not more of a challenge. The fact is, when I write something, I can only sing it the way I heard it. It's like taking dictation. It's very hard to improvise on one's own work. That's why people kind of just totally redo it in order to keep it alive. But somebody else's song, if it speaks to me, I hear clearly how it should be done. It's not any less real. I describe them more like rooms, and it's not any less real of a place to go into than one that I made. And I think sometimes people in the beginning of my career doubted the authenticity of covering a song. Singer-songwriterdom was sacrosanct. Bob Dylan was God Dylan. And I always objected to that. I thought, for me, Bob Dylan was no more important than Frank Sinatra. Frank Sinatra has impacted the culture as much in his time and his way. So I guess I insisted on doing covers from the very beginning because first I was a jazz singer. Then I started writing songs. And I like doing jazz, but I also liked defying the insistence that you not do a cover on a record where you're writing. You got to do a song, thing where you're writing, or you can do a thing where you're doing covers if you have to. We don't really think you should, but you sure better not put them together. And so that was what I did. And it caused some consternation, not just among critics, but it was really hard to market me. Like, what was I? What was I going to be?
Yeah, that's something I remember hearing from fellow music listeners from your first album. I think sometimes we have a tendency to want to call it something.
Sure.
And, you know, it's like, well, which aisle in the supermarket can I find this? And could you talk a little bit more about this? You mentioned Bob Dylan and Frank Sinatra. I think that's a good kind of metaphor for describing or discussing what you said, that you kind of consider yourself all over the place musically, and I know that can cause confusion and conflict with people, but just I consider it artistic curiosity. But just go talk a bit about that.
I like that. Well, it's hard to pretend that I'm not in the business and that there aren't genres and that those are the tools people who sell your work use in order to sell it. But as an artist, there are no genres. There's just what I'm interested in. And I don't feel like I should limit myself. I still don't, but I definitely didn't when I was young. I didn't feel like I should limit myself because it would be easier for someone to listen to me if I do a certain kind of music. But that hardly even didn't enter my consciousness. I'm just kind of hedonistic and just went wherever it was most pleasurable to be, to sing.
Again, I love the Sinatra-Dylan comparison because I told a listener recently that when I was growing up, there'd be people who would put you in a room and I'm speaking figuratively, of course, but they'd say, okay, here's a Bob Dylan record. Here's Sarah Vaughan. And they'd point a gun at you and they'd say, pick one. And I would always say, and still say, what if you love both? So, I think about your work and I think, well, what if she loves Tim Hardin and Sarah Vaughan, or Tim Hardin and working with Ben Harper? You know, it's just always interesting, I think, from observing your career as a fan, but also just the kind of trajectory of one's fans and what they accept, what puzzles them. And again, I think your curiosity.
I grew up in the 60s when AM radio played every kind of music. My family, my father had Billie Holiday, Sarah Vaughan, Harry Belafonte, Andy Williams, the Dorsey Brothers, and then the Beatles came out. And on radio, you could hear Bob Dylan and the Monkees and the Beatles and B.J. Thomas and an instrumental.
Right.
And so my palette is first AM radio and the style that my father sang in, which was most certainly jazz. My father's timbre was like, I think he must have really loved the Mills Brothers, because when I hear the Mills Brothers, that's closest to how my father sang. When I hear Frank Sinatra, that's the phrasing that he probably used, where he sat in back of the beat. So I had that, and then I hear the Beatles, and then that's kind of the magic synthesis that feeds all the things that come afterwards. And I don't know, I used to kind of hurt my feelings that I wasn't accepted into the jazz group. Then it hurt my feelings that I wasn't accepted into the alternative group. And it definitely didn't hurt my feelings as much, but I clearly wasn't accepted into pop music. When I started, I was invited into all of them, but year by year by year, I was excluded from all the clubs. And it's hard to talk about yourself from the outside, but what's his name? The guy in Black Flag who has a radio show, and his name has
Henry Rollins?
Yes.
Right, yeah, sure.
Henry
mm-hmm.
Rollins said that Ricky Lee Jones had no... I had no social movement to buoy my career, because if you're part of a larger movement, well, when people do retrospectives of that thing, you'll be included. Also, you're part of a larger group of people, and people, want to dress like that or what. So when you're a lone wolf and you're riding your own way, it can be, it's very lonely, but it's really no different than how I was as a little kid. It's just who I am, and my music is an extension of that journey.
Sure. Well, let's take a listen to Reason to Believe by Tim Hardin from your album The Devil You Know.
It's all true.
That was Tim Harton's Reason to Believe from The Devil You Know. I'm Reuben Jackson. This is Friday Night Jazz on VPR. With me in the studios, Ricky Lee Jones. We were talking about fitting music into categories. I was thinking about the fact that, I guess, you were on tour last few years and you covered the Pirates collection, which I consider one of the great suites. And I think, like a lot of people who love your work, it's coming from you, but it's so personal. And I think, you know, that ability to translate these experiences to something that, you know, it's like a postcard you keep on the wall. But my question is this: how do you know, artists continue to think and rethink and ideas? Was it difficult to go back and revisit those things? Was there still a pulse there for you? Or
I've never stopped doing that material. And to be honest, if you say we're doing Pirates, more people will show up. But the fact is I always do most of Pirates anyway. So there are very few songs that have fallen away from me. Almost all of them are still a part. I can find something about them that is still of me now, or I can go into the room and experience it exactly as I ever did. And there are very few songs that I cannot do that with. There are a few that are a challenge, but so I don't think it's just right there. It's no problem going into it. There was one thing about it that was unexpected. When I did the collection as a whole with the larger band, I started becoming like I was when I did that work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, started becoming more aggressive, more whatever it was I was. It was weird. So in a way, it's like you said, you know, it's very poetic, but you said like a postcard, but it feels like almost like I am acting reality, or reality, you know, becomes a theater through which I tell a truth. Somebody said, you're like almost more like performance art than performance now. And I thought, whatever words you use, I do seem to straddle some goofy boundaries on stage as well as off. What I'm doing up there feels almost sometimes dangerous. And I've read it, you know, it feels like it's dangerous emotional territory for the people as well as me. They go with me. And sometimes, most times there's a deliverance one way or the other, because that's my job. Sometimes I'm in more control than others. Sometimes I deliver them a little less high than I do on another night. But it always feels holy to me. It always feels like, you know, we experience something together as a group of spirits that we would never experience together any other place but in the theater. That it's more like church than church, because when you go to a place determined to experience a thing, you will not experience it. It only happens when you know, it's like it happens in the periphery of your vision. It won't happen if you look at it. So it's kind of, and I don't mean to, you know, I've heard other people say that, and I think they really mean it. But in the end, it is a job, and you're going there and playing music. But music is magic. And just because we get to hear it every day, we still can't explain why it makes our hair stand up, and we have to hear it every day. And when we hear it, we experience all these things which have no words, and we all experience it. Or there are melodies that are around the world. The exact same melody shows up, just a phrase or two, in country music in China, in Czechoslovakia, and in Tahiti. Oh, it's that. That means that melody has an intrinsic meaning, and wherever it shows up, it is. So we're dealing with stuff that, and I don't want to have it explained, but I know it's kind of magic.
Let's hear a bit of that magic we're discussing from Pirates. This is the title track. That was the title track from Ricky Lee Jones's collection, Pirates. I'm Reuben Jackson. Ricky Lee Jones is in the studio with me. Could you talk more about your influences? You mentioned the radio, and I certainly glommed onto that because I remember that when there was so much on the radio, and you could go from the Four Seasons to the Impressions, and I know you're from Chicago, and you talked about your father's musical influence, but what else kind of propelled you into this performing, composing lane?
I always sang since I was a little girl, and I was reflecting that when my father realized I could sing when I was 8, he had a reel-to-reel, and he taught me, the harmony to "You Are My Sunshine," and I sang it back to him right away. And I feel, in a way, it's the first time he looked at me, you know. And my mother came home from work, and he said, "Did you know she can sing harmony?" And he taught me "My Funny Valentine." He taught me "Ragtime Cowboy Joe," "The Sunny Side of the Street," and "Bye Bye Blackbird." I learned these that summer. "My Funny Valentine" has a thing where it goes from minor to major.
Right, yeah.
I was really, because I was pretty fast, but he kept trying to teach me this, and I'd get that note wrong. And I remember seeing his disappointment in his face. But it's like you're building a building and you've just decided to change the dimensions of the stairway, and maybe grown-ups understand why they did that, but I don't understand why that changed. And in a way, it is kind of an inauthentic idea to go there, but that's all right. We're gonna go to the major for no particular reason. So once I got that, he took me to audition. But that's another story. So I think that West Side Story was a movie that I saw that same year. And I guess that jazz stuff and West Side Story musically, I loved the drama, but musically had such a big impact on me. You know, I memorized that whole record. I walked around the third grade playing Snap in my
head. Oh, sure, yeah.
I tried to do that move, you know. And it stayed with me all my life. So my very first tour was the rooftop tour, and we'd run out of what looked like a stairwell onto a roof and yell, "Maria!"
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes I yell, "Maria." Because some part of me always wanted to be in West Side Story. I'll tell you another incredible thing is when I went to do Saturday Night Live the first time.
I remember that show. Yeah.
After the filming, I came home to the hotel, and West Side Story was on the television.
Oh, my gosh.
It had never been on TV before. Oh, so it felt to me like destiny, like all the things
yes.
in life had been saying, welcome, we've been calling you here a long time.
Come on in.
Yeah.
Great. There's a Bernstein quote from in We Belong Together from...
Sure.
Yeah. Right, yeah. I remember.
What is it?
Now I'm trying to remember.
I'm thinking musically, but I don't know about lyrically. So
no,
tell
no,
me
there's
what
a,
it
it's
is.
A musical quote.
Sure,
and
sure,
yeah,
just
I'm trying
the
to,
end.
Yeah, I won't
da,
sing.
Da, 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 da.
Right, that's it. Yeah, that flat at fifth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So let's hear We Belong Together. That was We Belong Together from Pirates. Ricky Lee Jones is in the studio with me tonight. I'm Reuben Jackson, host of Friday Night Jazz on VPR. Before we stop, I also want to talk about your work as a lyricist, because you've written more lines. You know, sometimes you read something in a book and you think, I wish I'd written that. But there are phrases from your songs that just really have stuck with me for years, like the terminal where dreams let so many tickets through. And could you talk a bit about your lyrical influences? I know there's your imagination, but are there specific poets, for want of a better word, that
I think of myself as kind of an awkward lyricist. I think that, like that, there's a terminal where dreams let so many tickets through. That's not easy to say, the melody.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful.
And it was a mouthful, and it was exactly what I saw. And in the end, I often wonder, why doesn't anybody ever record my songs? Well, I think, and then my answer is that maybe the lyrics make them a little. I can only say that I think I've always wanted to have humor. I think Steely Dan caught my eye when I was in college. I thought they were smart, searing, smart, funny. And even though they seemed to be misogynist, they were always talking about girls. Or it could have been in my 20s. I was used to being treated that way. I'm not really sure, but I still knew they were teachers and wanted to listen closely to. And I think you learn by imitation, and then you conquer through imitation. You go to another level, but you have to be able to do the thing you admire, don't you think?
I agree. I would agree.
I can't say, the Beatles were too far above me. I can't say that I was ever able to imitate anything except maybe the timbre of John Lennon in my own way. I thought maybe I did, or a pronunciation or something. I think that Laura Nyro had impact on me in so many profound ways. And the most important one was that she had she seemed to have a contentment with her sexuality. She was so feminine and so powerful. And these things I didn't associate. And I think just by witnessing that, I was a student and learned so much by seeing that kind of strength. And her lyrics reflected a sweet feminine, always coming from a feminine point of view, never ever setting that down. I don't have that so much, or if I do, it's more subdued, I think. I see myself, almost prepubescent. I see myself without sexuality. I'm a being. And I can't say that I'm a floating adult being. I think I'm more of a floating child being. So I see myself, I'm aware that I'm a girl and that as an adult woman I have sexuality. But the place that I come from when I write is not hampered by any of that. So I guess the Steely Dan and a little bit of Laura Nyro were probably the only thing that comes to mind.
Well, I can certainly, and I'm sure, again, the listeners have had this experience as well, but there's a clarity.
And Van Morrison.
Ah, yes. Okay. But there's a clarity of vision, for want of a better word, in I think your lyrics. And there's of course, all writers want to be clear and concise, but if I think of an image, for example, in Skeletons, the Waltz of Red Moonbeams, talking about the police light. But it's, in a way, it's the way a child might describe seeing a police car or an ambulance by the side of the road. And that's another example of something that's always stuck with me. And there's that part of me going, darn, I wish I could have written that. But mostly what I think is I'm glad it's there. It's out there in the world. And the other thing I would just add is I think as a composer, I've marveled at your use of space. And that's another place where I would say the Miles Davis comparison comes in, and knowing, that meshing of lyric and musical arrangement. And I was thinking, again, specifically about the end of the song Pirates, where there's like this two-note cadenza, but it's but the space is there. So there's a place for us as a listener, and it's kind of an inference. And so, again, I think all those things are really, it's a great, the writer Mary Baraka once used the phrase, a powerful motley of experience. And I think that your work is, you know, gives us that. The last question is one of those questions, you know, you've probably heard a million times. But so your last collection is, you know, these, I call them evergreens. They're I think of the nights with the radio stuck in my, the little transistor thing stuck in my ear and hearing these songs and going, oh my gosh, just kind of yearning all night. What's next for you in terms of recording?
I'm writing. I've started writing. I have a title or two of a tune. I have a feeling for the, that's how they start, is a feeling of from here to there where I'd like to go. And I haven't written, it's hard to believe, but I haven't written a new record in a decade.
Has it been? Wow.
The one that was out about 3 or 4 years ago was Odds and Ends that mm-hmm. had been left over.
Ah, mm-hmm.
The Evening of My Best Day, and then is my last record. The Sermon on Exposition mm-hmm. was somebody else's guitar tracks, and I'm so glad I've done this, but I was pursuing improvisation because I can't do it in pop. I can't do it as a writer. And it seemed the most challenging coming from Bob. Not a very good player, so I have to really practice and know how to mm-hmm. do it and play with the band. To come from there to, I know that I can do no wrong, and whatever happens, I'll know where to go, and I'll go there. And I did that a few times in performance. That's what I wanted to do. So it's a communion with others, because it's so much about myself. So in this place, I could do this with others. So now I've done that with others, and I'd like to write again, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to write another record.
Well, Ricky Lee Jones, it's been, to say it's a pleasure is an understatement. This is, I can take this off my karmic bucket list here. Thank you for coming in the studios here, Vermont Public Radio. If you're just tuning in, we've been talking to the one and only Ricky Lee Jones here on Friday Night Jazz on Vermont Public Radio with Reuben Jackson. Again, she's performing tonight at Linden State College and tomorrow in Portland, Maine. Thank you for your time, and thank you for this music, this big music.
You know, I want to say something because dropping in the years, you know, being interviewed by people and talking to people, it's so rare for anybody, but to feel like somebody gets you, and you've said these things and that have made me feel like, ah, somebody in the world. If one guy in the world sees so many things, there must be others. I'm going to have to, you know, go home and think about this. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Really?
No, well, thank you, because it's sincere, and I've learned so much from your work, and not just because I have been music spitting all my life, but it's I appreciate you saying that in the end. Just thank you. It's not just a professional.
Well, it couldn't be.
No, so thank you again.
It wouldn't be. Smitten.
Smitten.
You're welcome. Thank you.